אסתר פרק ב' אחר הדברים האלה, כשוך עמת המלך אחשוורוש, זכר את ושתי ואת אשר עשתה ואת אשר נגזר עליה. Now we know Chazal tell us that achar, as opposed to acharei, always means a long time later. And in fact, years have elapsed. We can figure out from the issues that were going on with the Beit HaMikdash, the number of years that needed until Achashverosh finally got put himself back together again. And there's something that is very strange about the pasuk, because it opens up with saying that after these years passed, the anger of the king cooled. But the truth is, it didn't quite cool, you see, because as Rabbi Yochanan points out, all those years, from the time that Vashti was killed until such time as finally Esther came in, he was unable to stop his rage at what had been done to him. So they asked him, but doesn't it say, Kisho Chamat HaMelech Achashverosh, before Esther came in? And once again, we're medayik the Chav, HaDimyon, which we've already done two times before. So we have the Kishevet and Kitov Lev HaMelech. And here we have Kisho, not truly Shov, but that he was at least capable of hiding it in this case. So that there were levels, Shechicha Achar Shechicha, as the Medrash puts it. So there were levels in which he was able to function, at least, in the context of his anger. And then it says he remembered Vashti and what she had done. I mean, he's been thinking about nothing else. What is this supposed to mean? But even however we understand it, the first part of the pasuk is a contradiction to the last part of the pasuk. Zacharet Vashti ve'et asher asata. Oh, yes, who was that? Oh, yes, I remember. There used to be a woman around here by the name of Vashti. Well, of course, that wasn't what he remembered. He remembered ve'et asher asata, ve'et asher nigzara leha. The irony of what it was that she used to do. And we said before, and here the Gemara refers to this again, that Et asher astata, asata kishem shasata kach nigzara leha. And this was her perversion of stripping girls and using them to do malacha, and that's why she was called in this fashion, ended up now being destroyed by a dafka on Yom HaShvi'i, as the Gemara says. So he sensed the irony in the position, but still doesn't explain this as here. And you'll notice, by the way, once again, Vashti, this is from the time that Haman has had his say. You'll notice that before, at the end of Pasuk Yotet, in the end of Perek Rishon, the one who was constantly Vashti Hamalka, Geitzei Tavar Hamalka, has suddenly been stripped. Asher lo tavo Vashti lifnei HaMelech Achashverosh. She no longer is HaMalka Vashti. We associate her with no royalty, with no gushpanka of royalty. She was just plain old Vashti. And indeed, when the king remembers her here, I mean, you would think that whatever the Zephira is, it had to do with the issues of the legitimacy that she conferred on him. But in fact, it didn't. It had to do with Vashti herself. So therefore, we need to recognize that the subsequent pasuk is the only way to understand this pasuk, which is the introduction to it. Vayomru nare hamelach mesharatav. Yevakshu lamelach narot betulot tovot mar'eh. Now obviously this is not a non sequitur. This is the result of the fact that as these years have passed, he has now remembered Vashti. And therefore we need to take a look at the results that they said, okay, if you remember Vashti, then maybe what you need is a woman that you can relate to. And therefore we should search for these narot betulot tovot mar'eh. But I mean, what is that supposed to mean? That for the past years he's never desired a woman? Is that what it's supposed to mean? Zachar et Vashti. But the truth is that we find exactly the same lashon when it comes to Kavayochol HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. So here we are 400 years later, after the brit with Avram Avinu. This is all aimed towards the Laila of Meshum Rubah, Misheshet Yimei Bereshit. And all of a sudden HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Va'ezkor et Briti. Oh yes. It's almost as if, and was there anything else that was involved in his relationship to the world? So clearly the Torah will use the word Zephira in the sense of being ready to act upon it. And surprisingly, the Kabbalistic concept of the Ezkor means to become virile. In other words, it now is clear, the Ezkor, the Zachor, so to speak. In other words, there's a preparation for relationship, which is noticeably in Zachrut. And therefore, V'zacharet v'ashtivet asher asata means that kisho chamat ha-melech ha-chashverosh, he was able to contemplate for the first time what it was that had happened, which indicates to us the unbelievably profound impact that what had happened that had on him. It means that for the past years, first of all, he was incapable of zechira, so to speak. There was no erections, there were no thoughts of women, there were no issues of capabilities of women. Vashti as a woman, Zacharet Vashti, was not in his mind. What it was that he had sensed was a decapacitation of his masculinity. She completely emasculated him, exactly. So this was an experience that left him indeed with an inability to perform. And this would explain exactly what happens in the next pasuk. Because the Na'arim, obviously being well aware of his problems, I mean, they were the ones who were taking care of everything until now. They're the ones that are closest to him. What they say to him essentially is that the only way, and this is what they pick up, the only way that you are going to be able to relate to a woman at this point is in an abnormal fashion. In other words, any woman that would be empowered over you. See how this is a continuation of the entire Haman idea of the marginalization of womanhood. The fact that language doesn't matter, position doesn't matter, no level of chashivut matters. The only thing that matters is shiekel ish sorer veitom. This is the type of words that are said by people that have problems with relationships. And we'll see why that figures so heavily in the Megillah as we go along. But what the Na'arim pick up is the only woman that this man is going to be capable of relating to is a woman who will never have an opinion of, in the sense that he'll never see her again. So that the big opportunity for Ahasuerus doesn't lie in the selection of the queen. It lies in the selection of the queen. So that all that's important really is that the supposed end of this process was this, the selection of the new queen, really provides him an opportunity to address his own problems in relationships, which is why, as the Gemara points out, this stands in such insane contrast to what it is that was done for David, because we immediately begin in Pasuk Gimel, V'yafked ha-melech pikidim b'chol medinot malchuto, appoint officers all across the country and let them gather up. It's as if he's sitting here putting out nets to trap women. And let them collect all of the lovely virgins to Shushana Bira, El Beit Hanashim, there to be taken care of by good old Hege. You could trust him because he's a Sarisa Melech. Shomer Hanashim, Vinaton Tamrukehem. And let us, all of you who have been learning Zvachim, will remember we're in the middle of the sugya of Umurak v'shutaf banai. What is Umurak? Tamrukim. So the idea of Murak, says Rashi, Dvorim ha-mitzach tzachim, make you shine. Kimo Umurak v'shutaf. That actually comes directly from the very words of the sugya that we've had. And in this context, the Chazal tells us here is the most beautiful indication of how it is that we see these distinctions between these two types of malchut. We spoke yesterday, 10, 15 examples of this, but the way the Gemara puts it is, Kol arom ya'ase bedat uchsil yifros ivelet. One who is truly wise, clever, arom, of course, is similar to the Nachash haya arom, uses da'at, but the fool spreads nothing but perversion. Kol arom ya'ase bedat refers to David, because David did exactly the same thing. He was looking for a na'ara betula that was yafat mare, exactly the same issue. What happened over there is, anybody who had a daughter was dreaming about maybe she will be the one that David would take, it would be Zochet. And therefore, anybody that had a daughter was hoping that she would be on that madriga. Uchsil yifros yivelet, this is Ahasuerus. Because anybody that had a daughter, it is best to hide her in a dungeon somewhere, but as long as that idiot wouldn't get hold of her. Because the whole idea over here was, of course, not the end, but the process. Whereas by David, There was no press. He was not personally involved. Not only was there never trying out this young lady, even after she was selected, he never slept with her, simply because he already had the requisite women. And as the Gemara puts it, it was better to be matir, the Isser of Yichud, with a Pnuya, than to be matir him to go and divorce a wife for no reason. And so the relationship with him, obviously this is merames to much more profound issues, as we've seen throughout the Megillat Rut. The idea of here is the relationship of sexuality to the Malchus, and that's why it becomes the only way in which the Melech is capable of giving over the Malchus, in which not only has he conquered the aspects of Ra, but has actually made the utilization of his physicality part of the achievement of the relationship itself without its needing to be consummated, which is remarkable, to the point at which the Gemara tells us Bera Vishagashunamit really believed that he was impotent. All these years that she was sitting on his lap, now that's quite a trick. And he had to prove to her that his virility was untouched. So this is all astonishing issue that the Gemara brings out at the very moment of the giving over the Malchus to Shlomo. Here we find exactly the opposite. He's dafke impotent, really impotent, because of the fact that she has so damaged his psyche. The only thing that allows him to relate is pure sexuality, absolute lust, no relationship whatsoever, and not even the tachlit of relationship. There's no point in achieving the relationship. The avadim over the Nahari Amal recognize that what's important is for him to have access to women under some guise in which it becomes a royal endeavor, and yet which no woman will be able to have a comment about him. She'll be locked up from that evening on unless he requests her. The Hanara Asher Titav Beinei HaMelech Timloch Tachat Vashti. The woman, the girl who will find favor in the eyes of the king, she'll be the new queen. And so he accepts this recommendation, which of course becomes an absolute degradation of everything that womanhood stands for, and with the nature of the Malchut as an independent entity. And here suddenly comes the piece in which, according to one man, the Omar, this is the essence of the Megillah, so that the real tokef for the Megillah is Ish Yehudi from this point on. Ish Yehudi haya b'Shushan HaBira, ushmo Mordechai ben Yair ben Shim'i ben Kish Ish Yemini. Now this is not really a very good yichus because it keeps skipping. And as the Gemara puts it, I mean, if what we're really interested in is an actual yichus, so give the whole yichus, go all the way up and tell us precisely who he was. But the things that are important over here, first of all, as we saw yesterday, is the relationship to Kish, because of the fact that this ties in everything that had happened with the failure of Shaul and his loss of the Malchus at the time of his own approach to Agag and to Amalek, and the results of that one issue, which was the birth of Haman himself, and his own great-great-great-granddaughter now, centuries later, that had to make up for what it was that he had destroyed. Now, obviously, that's going to have a lot more to do with things than simply the question of being mitaken, the fact that Agag was left to father Haman down the road. Because really, as we saw earlier, the nature of the defeat of Amalek is central to the binyan of the Beis HaMikdash and Yerush HaSaretz. In fact, it's a mitzvah that's directly associated with the Malchut itself. So these are the mitzvot. As soon as we come into Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvot, three mitzvot, is appoint a melech, lachrid zaro shel Amalek, and build a Beit HaMikdash. On that level, what's happening over here is classic. But because of whatever was chaser in the original Knesset HaAretz, with the Milchemet Amalek that was meant to lead to the binyan of the Beit HaMikdash, which David afterwards has to deal with, this now becomes very important because the second Beit HaMikdash, as we'll see, is much more profoundly related to Amalek than the first one was. And the tikkun that is required here in Purim is profoundly related to the way that Amalek will be defeated. You'll notice that just like initially in the Midbar, we go from Vayisu Mirifidim Vayavo Midbar Sinai, so that it was the relationship to Amalek at the first place that brought us to Har Sinai and the failures of Har Sinai, which the Zohar traces directly to that interaction with Amalek, which was specifically not meant to succeed, because all that Yoshua was told was to go and to be lochem vayachalosh Yoshua et Amalek lafichar. That word vayachalosh, by the way, has a double meaning. It also means poor. Cholesh al goyim means throw lotteries, the reference to Nebuchadnezzar. So vayachalosh Yoshua et Amalek laficharev was an attempt to defeat Amalek specifically through mechanics. It weakened Amalek, but Amalek's strength doesn't lie in mechanics. Amalek's strength lies in perception. And it's because of that that in our current time, in which it becomes clear there's nothing more powerful than the perceptual elements of Amalek, the beginning of that process was here. And we already saw the first response to the tragic, from Achashverosh's point of view, interaction with the inauguration of the new capital, and what it was that she had done to him at that very moment, was going to Spinarnes, speaking to the lawyers, of course, Yodei Dat V'Din, and the Chachamim, Yodei Haitim, who are spin artists. That's exactly what we have today. You go to your lawyers, and you go to your spin artists, and that's your publicist, and that's what handles things. That's all that he did. But the profound necessity at this point to deal with Amalek is because the second Beit HaMikdash, remember, was not mechanical. The first Beit HaMikdash was mechanical in the sense that miracles are mechanical, meaning that they require interference. They require some type of artificial cause and effect that's not based on the nature of reality. It's based on interference with the way reality works out. Amalek is based on possibilities. And it's their power of being able to show people, just like postmodernism is so powerful today, to show people that history is what you make of it, literature is what you make of it, morality is what you make of it, and therefore the human condition is what you make of it. When it comes to the second Beit HaMikdash, in which there would no longer be any Nisim, there were two possibilities. Either we could bemoan that, in which case the Beit HaMikdash would never have been built, or we can recognize that we've arrived at a level in which we view with disdain the interference in reality that is the nature of nature. The Gemara tells us that the essential building of the Beit HaMikdash came from here because Ayelet HaShachar, as Esther is called in Tehillim, means just like the Shachar is the end of the night, so too is Purim, the end of miracles. And that means this was a tremendous achievement, needed to be an achievement within the context of Hur, true Chalisha, in which it was going to deal not with anything mechanical whatsoever. There was no attempt to influence affairs in a way that had any meaning in terms of cause and effect. This the Gemara brings out by pointing out that what it was that Esther was doing was that she hadn't the slightest idea of what it was that she was doing. She was just doing whatever it was that might have had an impact, because it was whatever was left open to her to do. Very similar to the psychohistory responses in Foundation, which is meant to be, as I mentioned earlier, it's meant to be a parable, basically, of Megillat Esther, the history of Yisrael. And so when we get to Ish Yehudi Hayah B'Shushan HaBirah, one of the most important things is that Chazal compare this Ish Yehudi to Moshe. But first of all, he's Ben Kish, and therefore he belongs here. He's also the man, we find Ramazim here, Ben Yair, Ben She'ir et Einayim Shal Yisrael betfilato. Ben Shim'i, Ben Sheshama El et Tfilato. Ben Kish, Ben Mishi Kish al Daltei Rachami. He knew how to knock on the right doors. Of course, it's sort of backwards, but remember, great-grandpa was knocking, grandpa was listening, and dad was HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded. So that's fine. In the backwards order, when we're talking about going up in Dorot, it makes sense to have the backwards order. But the relationship of Ish is very important, because just like we say, Melamed is the best. Chazal tells Melamed Shayam Mordechai Shakul B'Doro, Kemoshe B'Doro. We've already seen how important Mordechai was in the original plans, because this is basically Lasot Kretzon Ish Ve'Ish. There's two Ishim that are mentioned here. There's the Ish Yehudi, and there's the Ish Tzar V'Oyev. Both of them are going to be very focused on Moshe, of all crazy things. We already know how it was that Haman was focused on Moshe. Kivan shenafala pura chodesh adar samach, because after all, Moshe died. Big deal. Says the Gemara, he was absolutely right about that, except that he missed the fact that Moshe was also born on Zayin Ba'adah, because it says, Ben Me'avesim Shana Anochi Hayom, Hayom Nibu Yomai Shnotai.
does it really matter?
So he was very focused on Moshe. We know that the original Mechias Amalek by Yoshua was Vayiyadav Emunah, which is interesting because that becomes the word in the continuation of the story here about Mordechai, Omein et Hadassah, Yester, and so on. So the Yadav Emunot, Emunah, has something to do with it. And we know, of course, that the lifetime of Moshe is consummated only in Purim. The destruction of the Kabbalat HaTorah that Moshe Rabbeinu attempted to achieve on Har Sinai is remedied only in Purim. That we know from the Gemara in Shabbat, because, as Rava says, Mikan Moda'a Rabba Leoraita, we have a serious problem with Kabbalat HaTorah, and that was Kafaleim Har Chigigit. And nonetheless, when it came, and until then we could have said, listen, God, we never really wanted it. But when it came to Purim, there it is, Kimu V'Kiblu Ayudim, Kimu Mash Kiblu Kvar, that this was now a Hadar Kiblu B'Meh HaShverosh, was the acceptance with a full heart during the days of HaShverosh. It cannot be coincident that the problem, and this is the moment that we introduce Mordechai, the problem of Kabbalat HaTorah, essentially, as the Maharal puts it, is that it was a rape. The good part of its being a rape is that the din is that the rapist can never divorce the woman that he takes, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't get rid of us, as the Maharal puts it. But obviously, the deeper elements of the sense of coercion that is built into the Kabbalat HaTorah at Har Sinai has to be addressed by the centrality of rape in the story of Purim as well. And therefore, it appears immediately here. And so this was the man who was the Moshe Bedoro, and therefore, says the Medrash, Ma Moshe li me Torah li Yisrael, Rav Mordechai, the Divrei Shalom ve'emet, Viktiv, Emet k'nei ve'al timkor. Therefore, it's a reference to Torah itself. And so here, the Ish Yehudi, and of course, if you call him an Ish Yemini, in what sense could he possibly be an Ish Yehudi? So the simplest level, of course, is to say that anybody who came from Medinat Yehuda in those days was called a Yehudi, which is certainly true. We saw that Iti Guvrin Yehudai, and so on. We saw back in Daniel that that's certainly was the case. But there's also other issues. One, the Medrash identifies as this was a guy who was willing to stand up against everybody. And therefore, every concept of Yehudi includes in it Yechidi. Someone who's Miyachet Shmur Shalak HaKadosh Baruch Hu with whatever it takes is called Yehudi, which is a reference to the other aspect of Yehudi that the Gemara recognizes, which is Kol HaKofer Bavadat Kochavim, and was willing to fight against Bavadat Kochavim, is always called a Yehudi from the sense of the Yehoda'ah, the acceptance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Of course, the fact that we could identify somebody as being both Yehuda and Binyamin relates to the deeper tikkunim of Purim, which is that it goes all the way back to the relationships that were had between Yosef and Echav and the tikkun that Yehuda has together with Binyamin and so on. But this goes a little bit beyond, which Rami's to it here, goes beyond the simple meaning of the verses that we're learning. And this man, Asher Hagolani Yerushalayim Im Hagola Asher Haglatan, now that makes very clear. He was exiled from Yerushalayim. Doesn't say he was exiled. It says he went into exile with the exile that had been exiled with Yechoniah Melech Yehuda, who had been exiled. Asher Hagolani Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel. That's an awfully complex and convoluted way to say a simple idea. But in fact, as the Gemara identifies it, Asher Hagola takes him out of the Galut. It's not that somebody was active in making him the object of the Galut. Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel was Magle, in fact, Yechoniah. But Mordechai chose to go. Golam Miatzmo, says the Gemara. He went on his own. Now, we've already seen, as Rashi showed us, both in Ezra, and Rashi brings it here later on in the Megillah, that Mordechai was sent as an agent, actually, to deal with the fight against the Binyan of the Beis HaMikdash, that was hired, the lobbyist that had been hired by the Kutim and the others in Eretz Yisrael. The only one that could deal with it was Mordechai. But that was after he had already left. We found him, remember, together with Zerubbabel, Mordechai Bilshan. And that means that he had come to Babel, left from Babel together with Zerubbabel, and was then sent back to Babel. You'll notice the strange relationship, not only that we've seen in Shar Shushan, in calling the new master of Israel Zerubbabel, in giving Mordechai a name that's named after Marduk and Babylonian gods, when he has a perfectly good Jewish name of Ptachya, as we saw. But, I mean, it makes it even more complicated. It means that initially he recognized that he was meant to be in Babel. Now, there's one very simple explanation of why that's true, but there's more to it than just meets the eye. The simple explanation is, as we saw, the tremendous koch of Mordechai was specifically indeed as Tachya, which means Mordechai Bilshan. Bilshan is, we use as a detective, we use as a linguist in modern Hebrew. Balshanut is the ability to take things apart, to understand what exactly is the deeper meaning behind what appears to be on the surface unclear, or perhaps overly clear. That concept of Balshanut is actually taken from Mordechai as a modern term. If his koach lies in language, then he has a very good reason to go to Babel. Because as we saw, the victory of Babel in Nebuchadnezzar's terms is a victory of the original Babel. It's the Nebuchadnezzar's Ben Benoshan Nimrod HaRasha. And therefore, it's not coincidental that the loss of Babel, as we saw in the first parak, is the loss of language. Shiakol Ish Sorer Veito Umedaber Kelashon Amo, which letters are immediately sent exactly as the Dorah Flog. Instead of sending out the details in Kastit, they're sent out in local language. 127 different local languages. He's the only man that can deal with that. And he is the man who actually ends up using local language to advance his position in the rebellion of Biktan Vateresh, we'll see. But, obviously, there's something that is much more profound in that as well. In exactly the same way that the moment of the Milchama with Amalek links up to what it is that Ahasuerus is doing specifically because of multiculturalism. What it is that Ahasuerus opened the door to is multiculturalism. Multiculturalism is associated always with the ideas of postmodernism. If we're willing to accept all of the languages as having validity, even though their meaning is really untranslatable into one into the other in any significant terms, you get only the broadest sense of the meaning, but all of the issues that define a culture, everything that exists between the lines, the worldview of the speaker, it's not translatable. Well, the French don't care what they do, actually, as long as they pronounce it properly. And so the idea, therefore, is the moment that he became a politician and created the first party, political party, at that moment, he also opened the doorway to the complete change of a Malchus that was meant to be Antureisha de Dahava of Nebuchadnezzar initially, in which the brain controls all and central control, which is very much the Nimrodian vision of the original Babel, becomes over here the first step to the final dissolution of central control, which of course relates back to the idea of randomness, Amalek, and what it is the Beit HaMikdash is going to become. Therefore, it is the moment in which his relationship to Kish, his relationship to Esther, his relationship to Shaul becomes so clear to him. It's the first time in history that every last piece becomes linked up. And therefore, the idea of Mordechai seeing, being capable to see the way the Medrash puts it is, he was one of the few people, Shenitan lo remez v'chash. He had a remez to what was going to happen, and he took it serious. And he acted upon that remez, so that in initially going, when things didn't happen, yeah, there were all these amazing visions of Daniel about what would be. But it became very unclear, as we saw in the end of the period of Daniel, as to whether there were going to be any soon-to-come changes, whether this was something that was going to take thousands of years, whether there was going to be opportunities to maybe change things more rapidly. All of those things were left up in the air at the end of Daniel. And so when there was the Koresh proclamation, he left, went along to see what could be done together with Zerubbabel. When he was sent back, he took that so seriously that not only did he not, as we saw the other people in the country, hid their daughters in order to prevent them from coming forth. It's mashma that he considered it to be precisely what everything was all about. Very strange. So part of his remez was the recognition that it would have to be that the king would be replaced. Indeed, exactly, had been brought out by the posuk Leru'uta hatova mimena. Leru'uta hatova mimena could only be one person, a scion of Shaul. Because that's when those words removed the Malchus, gave them to David with everything that was achieved in terms of the Beis HaMikdash, needed to be put back to the original Reah that had been so accepted by HaKadosh Baruch. But remember what that must involve. It must involve, as the Gemara says, concept of Tzniut, because that was what Rachel was. That's what Bishus Tzniut Shaitava V'Rachel Zachta V'Yatzah Mimena Shaul, Bishus Tzniut Shaitava V'Shaul Zachta V'Yatzah Mimenu Esther. So then that means that rape, something to do with tzniut, that's rather strange. Esther certainly doesn't come across as being very tzanua. I mean, if anything, she's the only time that we find openly. I mean, yes, we understand that Yael was active in the same way. There were women in history that used sex as a way of protecting Israel, but never so blatantly to be told by her actual husband, as in a woman, to go in and seduce Achashverosh. To the point where she has to say, Kasher avadati avadati. This now provides us with a clue of the themes to come. Vayi omen et hadasa hi ester bat dodok in la avaim. He had been raising Hadassah, questioning the Gemara about whether her name was Esther and she was called Hadassah, or whether her name was Hadassah and she was called Esther. According to Rabbi Meir, her name was actually Esther, and she was called Hadassah because tzaddikim were called Hadassim. But what's unique about the Hadassah, of course, just Merubas in the Pasuk, who omeid bein Hadassim, is that the Hadass, this is Lahaloch, the Hadass is completely covered. So what's unique about the Hadass is that the stem is fully covered by its leaves. And this has to do, as we'll see, with the nature of the mystery of Esther, which is the hiddenness of Esther, which is the Esther of Esther, that is to say, the hiddenness. And this was, of course, part of her tzniut, which is taken in a rather mechanistic way nowadays. But we'll see how profound it is and how much it defines the entire nature of what it is that Esther achieves. So that she's called Esther, and she's compared to Hadassah, according to Ben Azai, and she's actually called the Esther because she's called Hadassah because she was didn't stand out. According to Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, she's called Hadassah because of the fact that she was green. Of course, that being green is a rather strange kind of thing, and we'll have to see how that too defines the nature of the entire achievement of Esther. Everybody thinks it's this little joke on the side when it actually is the centerpiece of the entire book. And according to, there's also another approach that it's Esther has something which is both mar and matok. If you try tasting it, quite bitter, but the smell of it is quite beautiful. And so too, Esther utilized the same elements of her personality to be mituka l'Mordechai and mar to Haman, as we'll see. But what's important over here is that he was raising her from the time that she was a child. Because ki ein la av ve'im, it says, and then repeats, for no apparent reason, v'hanara yifator v'tovat mar'er. So she's beautiful inside and out. Uvemot avia ve'ima, of course, we already know that in la av ve'im. And therefore, as the Gemara tells us, the repetitious, uvemot avia ve'ima l'kacha Mordechai lo levat, is coming to teach us that the moment that her father impregnated her mother, he dropped dead. The moment that her mother gave birth to her, she dropped dead. So she never had any connection to parents at all. But what's important to us as well is that Mordechai lekachalo lebat, the Gemara learns out that lebat actually means labayit, so that he actually had married her. Now, this is not something that we would happily publicize, Bisman Hazeh, because it certainly sounds awfully abusive. He takes this niece of his as a little girl and then takes her to be his wife. And it's not surprising that she doesn't say anything about it later, but what's more astonishing, of course, as you'll remember, this was the whole issue of the Kafalim Archigigit. The way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu defines his relationship to us, we read this in the Haggadah Shel Pesach, when we quote the words of Yechezkel, is that Hashem says that he finds us wallowing as an infant, essentially, without anybody taking care of us, takes us, washes us up, diapers us, and then, hinei itech et dodim, when you finally get mature enough to want to love, then he marries us, which means we're like, what, 11 or 12? I mean, what is this? So that indeed the reaction at the Har Sinai itself and throughout the time of the Midbar was a sense of feeling abused, of feeling coerced into this relationship. And this, in fact, is the entire makor of the relationship, as we know, that Zacharti l'chesed niurayich avat kelulatayich is specifically a responsiveness that could only have come from a child. And that this is exactly what
what it was,
that the Yetzias Mitzrayim was based on, which is why we talk about it in the Haggadah Shel Pesach. And so this particular relationship of Hadassah Esther to Mordechai brings us straight back to the issues that were at risk in the original Kabbalah Satera, which is addressed here in the Kimu V'Kibu, if you will recall, which is a tikkun of all that was missing in the original. Now, if Hadassah is her name, then of course the name Esther becomes very important, because indeed throughout she's called Esther because she is Nasteret Dvarea, so that she keeps, this is part of what she keeps quiet. So constantly the refrain is Ein Esther Magedet, Ein Esther Magedet, Ein Esther Magedet, and the other reason is because the Uvot Olam would call her Al Shem Ishtar. Rashi says that that is the Lashon of the moon. Of course, that becomes the symbol of femininity and of women's lib, ultimately, which is also very much part of this story. So all of these themes are merumas even in the names, and we'll see how they develop as we continue going on. And so he takes her immediately, which means that she was a completely, a completely dependent person who, in fact, seems to indicate in the early stages of the Megillah, total dependency. Doesn't ask for anything. She doesn't think of herself at any point. She does exactly what she's told to do by Mordechai. Doesn't bring anything into the Beit HaMelech. Responds to whatever Haggai says. You take this? Okay, I take this. And this is apparently part of what appears to be an insufficiency of personality at the beginning when we describe her, so that she had absolutely nothing to rely on. And in fact, that was the same lashon Chazal point out that we find in Eicha, Yitomim Hayinu Ve'en Av. I mean, obviously, Yitomim Hayinu Ve'en Av, but that same lashon that we have over here, Vobota V'Yavima, again. And indeed, the Medrash says that the same way that you felt that way at the time of the Churban, HaGoel Shani Atid LaHamid Michem, also will feel exactly the same way. She's a Yetoma and Ein La Avaim. Vayibi Shamadvar HaMelech Vidato, Uviikavetz Naharot Rabot HaShushana Bira El Yad Hegoi, Vatilakach Ester El Beit HaBelech El Yad Hegai Shomer HaNashim. And so it was when the words of the king and his decree, now this some understand to mean that initially she had been hiding out, because when it says vayivi shamad varmel v'tacho, none of this is really important, since it had nothing to do with its being heard. It just had to do with the fact that vatilakat, that this must be a separate stage, as Malbim points out, in which initially she was making certain not to be outside and not to be caught in the roundup nets for the betulot. But then they made a gezera that you cannot remain hidden. It wasn't just a question of if you're found and you're taken. And so at that point it became dangerous to hide out. And then vatilakach Esther el Beit HaMelech, she indeed was taken, not stam when everybody else was taken, El Shushan Habira El Yad Hegai, but rather she was taken directly to the Beit HaMelech, because vatitava na'ara be'ina vatisa chesed lifanav. He immediately, and this of course happened with Sarah as well, we already saw the connection between Esther and Sarah, the 127 Midinot, which we'll discuss later. But one of the striking things of Sarah was that immediately as they crossed the border, so as Rashi says, the Lashon over there means that she is Ruya Lefaro, not simply that it was found out and that ultimately she, they immediately picked up on the fact that this is the one woman that might be suitable on the Madrega of Paro. And here too, he immediately identified her as the one who had a chance with Achashverosh. Because of that, he takes her directly to the Beit HaMelech. And because of that, Vayevahel Tabrukel Vet Monotel Tetla, he goes out of his way to put her at the top of the list of all needs, so that he gives her the things, as we'll see, that he decides are best for her. All of the best type of makeup and all of the best things to eat. This, says the Malbim, means that he already was treating her as if she had already been chosen. Because not all of the women were given Sheva Ne'arot. Those, the one who would be queen, Ruyot L'Tet La Mibet HaMelech, means the one that would be Ru'uya. Ultimately, Vayishanea Ve'et Ne'arotea L'Tov Beit HaNashim, and treated her differently, her and her entire entourage differently in the Beit HaNashim from anyone else. In fact, it's interesting that Rabbi Yochanan says the Vayishanea relates back to Daniel. By Daniel, they were also Vayishanav, in that they gave him the macrobiotic diet, which was the whole Ebenezer approach, that that's why he looked better. It wasn't a miracle. Anybody's on a macrobiotic diet. So Vayishanea Latov is the lotion that Zeronim, Hechila, the same thing that had been done for Daniel, despite the fact that, of course, she wasn't claiming it was for Kashrut, because Lo Yigida Esther Etama Vet Molanta. She told no one who it was that she was, where she had come from, what her nation was, and what her personal pedigree was. Of course, had they known that she was from Mishpachat Shaul, so then they certainly would have felt that she was Ru'uyah for the Melech. On one level, it was important for her to give over the sense that she doesn't have any Yichus, that she doesn't know where she comes from, that she's basically an Asufim and Ashuf, so to speak, and therefore, on one level, not Ru'uyah to the Melech, but we'll see that there's a much more important level that ends up emerging from all of the secrecy of Esther. Uvechol yom vayom. Now, Ki Mordechai this too is very important. It's not that she had a plan in not telling. It's that she was following what it was that Mordechai had told her. Again, initially this appears to be just the fact that she doesn't have anything of her own. She's always doing what people are telling her to do. A completely compliant Esther. ובכל יום ויום מרדכי מתהלך לפני חצר בית הנשים לדעת את שלום אסתר ומה יעשה בה. Now it's clear from here, as Ebenezer points out, it's clear from here that this man was an important individual before any of the subsequent events. In other words, the very fact that he's listed right almost at the top of the group who went together with Belshazzar, that group was empowered by the Koresh proclamation, who actually selected the chiefs of the country to give them over the responsibility and also the monetary empowerment that he gave at that time. So that must have meant that he had already been in an important position. The fact that he was Yoshev Bishar HaMelech is astonishing, because the only one that was Yoshev Bishar HaMelech up until now was Daniel. Daniel achieved that only after many years, and after having done these amazing public feats where he had proven himself and his level of interpretation, and because of that became a trusted advisor for all of the kings of Babel, and according to some, the Hatach that's here retained his position as Daniel. That means that Mordechai was important before, and nonetheless, no one knew of this relationship. We see in the end it was only that she was Higira Mahula. It's only because of that, points out the Ebenezer, that he could possibly have had the rights to be Mitalech Lifnei Chatzar Beit Anashim. I mean, anybody else would have been shot. What in the world are you doing in the Mitcham, in the area of the palace at all? Remember that Shushan HaMirah is a unique area of Shushan, and we'll see Ramazan to it later on, in that there was a canal, more than just a moat, that had actually separated the entire area of the capital section of Shushan from the city, and he wouldn't have had any business of being in that area unless he was already in the Beit HaMelech. And it was because, as Chazal tell us, of the simen, that he was chash. The simple level of the simen, we've said, why would it be specifically that this wonderful girl would be taken to the palace of Ahasuerus? But obviously, I mean, we know he himself tells Esther about Miodeim Le'et Kazot, that he knows who she is. She knows who she is. The whole issue revolved around her coming from the Beit HaMalchut. We'll see later on that the moment that she says who she is, the entire relationship changes with Ahasuerus. We know that up until this time, the centerpiece of his concern was his competitiveness with the true Malchut. We saw the different ways in which he acted out the things that Shlomo had acted out, the attempt to be Yoshev HaKisei Shlomo, the taking out the Kalim of the Beit HaMikdash in one party, the Bidei Kohuna in the party that was specifically for the noble, the Shtiya Kedat Shel Torah, specifically to do it the way that they had done it, the relationship to Yom HaShavi, many, many other issues in which the idea of the Kishevet, as we saw earlier, was his consciousness of the dangers that a Beit HaMikdash represented to him and the way in which he wanted to compete. The idea of Shushan HaBiraz being the entry point into the Beit HaMikdash, and the refrain of At Chatziya Malchut Velo Davar Chotzeh Et HaMalchut. This was not a small issue. So that knowing who she was would have changed the entire equation in the relationship, as ultimately it does, instantly, as we'll see towards the end of the Megillah. And therefore, when it says Mordechai Tzivash Alea Shelot Tagid, there were many, many different levels of this. And yet, the simple issue is obviously complex to the point where it must have related to Mordechai's own venture back to Bavel, of his own design and of his own commitment, Asher Galah Miatzmo, so that he needed to be in the right place at the right time, was sent, according to Rashi, to be the right man at the right place at the right time, and recognized that the most powerful part of being the right person at the right moment was the fact that he was Esther's uncle. And in the end, of course, everything is twisted around, in which the true relationship of the forces is not Mordechai to Esther, but Esther to Mordechai, as we will see. This is all part of the astonishing transformation of what appears to us to be a transformation in the personality and characteristics of Esther, and turns out not only not to be a transformation, but to be the essence of Tzniut and the tikkun of the original concepts of Busha as they were meant to be in Maaseh Bereshit. They didn't know. Of course they didn't know.
Of course they didn't know, yeah. But isn't it obvious then why they didn't know?
Well, no. On the surface, she's trying to protect herself from being taken. So, again, as I'm saying, there's two levels here. There's an expectation that she will be taken, but that taken has to be as rape. The fact that they identified her as someone that they wanted, and we'll see later on that as far as Achashverosh was concerned, she was for all intents and purposes a virgin. We call it betulot. So it wouldn't have helped. But furthermore, they could have thrown Mordechai into jail. And what kind of business is this? What are you sleeping with her and taking advantage of this child? What exactly are you doing, right? The whole relationship is not a relationship that's understandable outside of the two of them. And so he every day, and one of the things that he's doing every day, and this becomes symbolic. That's symbolic. It's one of the most profound expressions of the entire relationship of Mordechai to the concepts of Purim, is that there's never a moment that doesn't count. I mean, remember, we're talking about over a year. This goes on. The whole thing started 4 years earlier, really. This is going on a whole year. So, I mean, you know, it's like visiting a parent in an old age home, you know. First month, baby will come every day, maybe. You know, then it's every other day. By the time the fourth month is around, you know, they're lucky to get a telephone call once a month. So what is going on over here, that he's going every single day, b'chol yom v'yom, without fail. Each moment is to him clear that there is the possibility that this is the instant. This may be the moment. That becomes very much part of the entire Gilui of Purim, of the astonishing opportunities that are presented in each moment, so that everything that happened before crystallizes instantaneously in that particular moment. And because of that, what Mordechai originally does over here is absolutely convinces no lessening. There's no doubting. There's no questioning in his mind whatsoever. Delays are meaningless. The emunah, kasharaita be'onaito, the sense of emunah, of absolute clarity, of the presence of the underlying hashgachas Hashem, which we'll see means something very different than the way people take it, in the presence of Esther in that Beit HaMalchut was to him so glaringly, powerfully obvious that he was always aware of it. Ubehagiator na'ara v'na'ara, lavo el ha'melach Achashverosh, miketze eotla kedat ha'nashim, 12 chodesh. Kikenim lo yameim rukehem, 6 chodashim b'shemen amor, v'6 chodashim b'besamim, and so when it would come to turn for each one of these virgins, this of course lets us know already, we're talking about a 12-month period, from the time of the Vehikavetz until such time as there's even the chance that she'll be called into the Malach. And this was only at the end of a preparation period of 6 months in Shemen Amor, 6 months of immersion in all types of besamim. Actually, the Gemara says that this is very dangerous, and that there's a case of the Gemara where someone was actually killed by trying to use this stuff overly much. Actually, the Malbim says that was part of it. If she could survive, he was looking for, you know, some seriously good genes too. It wasn't just a question of making her beautiful. So in other words, you needed a real constitution and a lot of good health to be able to put up with everything that they put up during these 6 months. They were put through hell, basically. And only with this, It kola shetomar, and she had the choice of anything at that point that she wished. Anything that she asked for, yinaten la lavoima mi beit anashim ad beit hamelach. If she wanted an orchestra with her, she wanted a bunch of hula dancers or whatever, that would be part of the show that she would put on. Anything that she wanted could come with her. Be'erav yiva'ah, she would come in the evening of avoker yishavan, go back that night, but not to the same place. It would be al beit hanashim sheni. It would be to the other place for the used women. El yad she'ashkaz sris hamelach shomer ha'pilakshim lo tavo od el hamelach. She was no longer had a turn. Im chafetz ba'hamelach v'nikra'a v'shem. He would have to actually request her services by name if she was ever to see him again. Ubahagia tor Esther bat Avichayil dod Mordechai asher lakach lo lavat lavo el hamelach. And here, this repetition tells us that every last element of who it was that she was, of what she had gone through, of the specific relationship that she had with Mordechai, all of those were part of the fact that lo biksha davar, she asked for nothing. Now again, on the simplest level, she asked for nothing is because obviously asking for something would mean she desired to win. But she was an anusa. She couldn't desire to win. She wished for nothing. She did only kimasheta shayumar haigai siris hanamelech shomer hanashim. But again, that has two levels. I mean, on the one level, yes, she couldn't ask for anything, but on the other level, she never asks for anything. Vati Esther noset chen beinei koroeha, and she indeed found favor in the eyes of all. And as the Gemara says, I mean, does this mean that we know Baruch HaKodesh? It must be that Esther here is written Baruch HaKodesh, because how else could we say that she was noset chen beinei koroeha? Well, no, it's very simple. It's like in My Fair Lady, where the count comes in and declares she is Hungarian. There's no greater proof that he has succeeded if, as the Gemara puts it, kol echad ve'echad nidbetalo bat umato. Every single person believed that she was, in fact, a princess from his own country. So if that were the case, then you don't need Ruach HaKodesh to say that she was motzit chen b'nei koro'eha, because chen, the first indication of chen, is the sense of the comfortableness, the attraction that you feel to that which is open to you. And so the girl next door, ultimately, is the way they felt about her, having never seen her before. And that must mean that she was motzit chen b'nei koro'eha. In which case, again, on the simplest level, she would be the most fabulous choice, because after all, if you're looking for a queen, and you're talking about a queen who is going to be the representation of the new politic, of a world which everybody can relate to, then we have to look at this beauty contest as a contest for Miss Universe, not just any old beauty contest. Who could be universally admired? That's what it means to be Miss Universe, really. And that is exactly what Chazal are telling. She was Miss Universe. Not to just the Beit HaMelech, but El Beit Malchuto. So the Zegai had immediately identified her as the winner anyway. So he arranged that she be brought to the very innermost private chambers of the Melech. B'chodesh Asiri u'chodesh Tevet. In the 10th month, which is Chodesh Tevet, what is the implications of that? Says the Gemara, it's exactly the right temperature for two bodies to enjoy each other. Chodesh Aguf ne'enem min Aguf. So all issues are arranged so that she should be attractive to him. Bishnat Sheva la Malchuto. You understand this means 4 years have passed. The story began in Bishnat Shalosh la Malko Kishavat. Vayehav ha-melech et Esther mikol anashim, vatisachen v'chesed lefanav mikol ha-betulot. And so we have here a double language, as I'll tell us. On the one hand, mikol anashim, on the other hand, mikol ha-betulot, which implies that she was both an isha, meaning a mature woman, an experienced woman, and on the other hand, she was a bitula, so that she gave over the sense of the virginess, of the fresh, of the new. As the Gemara puts it, bikesh lit'om ba ta'am bitula ta'am. If he desired to taste in her the taste of the bitula, that's what she became for him. Tam bi'ula ta'am. Whatever it is that he wanted. He wanted a woman who would lead, who was experienced, that's what she was. He wanted a woman who was a new newcomer, was all open to his own experimentation. That's what she was. But of course, the deeper sense here, again, is that Esther is what you want her to be, in the deepest sense. She is every man's dream woman. She will be exactly what I imagined, a pure fantasy. So that every fantasy, which we always talk about as that which is not actualizable and represents the madness of sexual obsession, is actually there in a real live human being. I mean, it's almost as if she was created on the internet, you know? One of these weird robotic things that is just precisely what you want. What's that? No, it's not Avatar. It's that. Nothing to do with that. It's that movie where they got rid of the women and they made these. I forgot what it was. What was it called? Stafford Wives.
Stafford.
Whatever it is. It's weird. That's for sure. That's so. This is a very deep issue because again, it's touching on the underlying problem of the original relationship that created the war between the sexes and the Vuhuyim Sholbach. The Vuhuyim Sholbach is what this is all about. So that the Vuhuyim Sholbach began with the taking of Chava as Etzem Miatzamai, Ubasar Mibasari, and deciding that the perfect name for her is Mrs. Man. Isha, Kibi Ish Lukachazot. That is not the sensitivity to the relationship out of which something new emerges, and instead is mechanical. So I take her, which in the end, because of her response to that, landed up in the Vuhuyim Sholbach. It was exactly what it started, the whole cascade downwards, and here reaches its height as Haman. We know the Gemara identifies Haman as the name which is Hamin Ha'etz Asher Abarticha Lecha Lo Le'achol Imenu. What did you take from that tree? Hamin is Haman. So that what we're dealing with over here is very, very much those issues that go all the way back to Gan Eden, in which the phallic symbol of the Nochash is a representation of the nature of rape, as the Gemara is pretty explicit about in Masechet Shabbat, and that what we need to do over here is to change the nature of that relationship, and this is part of the Nahafochu that is so central to the Megillah. Vayehava Melech, and what happens here is not that, as we thought, it was the process in which getting there is all the fun, but actually, he falls in love with her. That was not something that anybody expected. I mean, you know, there was lots of girls waiting in line. What the heck? Why not spend another 10 years? It's a great party. But he actually falls in love with her. And love that is deeper than his simple attraction of Atisachin v'chesed, which is more than simple attraction. It's attraction which is also linked to the underlying appreciation of her existence, which is chesed, not simply chen. So it's more than his relating to her as a betula. It's the maturity of a relationship that's reflected in the vayehav. This was something that was a remarkable change, and for the first time, Achashverosh had an opening to construct a relationship. And so, Vayasem Keter Malchut Berosha, they set the Keter on her head, Vayam Lichea Tachat Vashti, and she became queen in the place of Vashti. Now, that means that the essential points that have been achieved so far in our parak is actually not simply the introduction of Mordechai v'Esther, but the empowerment of Mordechai v'Esther. When the rest of the parak goes on to tell us about the way in which Mordechai actually saves the life of Ahasuerus, and that's the closing of the parak with the rebellion of Bigitan v'Teresh, it means that everything is in place. So that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Magdim Refua L'Malkah, as the Gemara puts it, but it means that in a literary sense, the power of this parak is the sense of empowerment that begins to surround the king and his court with the presence of Mordechai the Esther and the vast history that lies behind it that suddenly is brought to bear with such unbelievable force that everything is seen almost as a plaything in the hands of the underlying patterns that come out. Now, we wouldn't know the extreme importance that the Melech placed on the fact that Esther was not Magedet at Amavet Moladata if it hadn't been for the following two psukim. Vayas HaMelech Mishte Gadol L'chol Sarav Avadav Et Mishte Esther V'Hanacha L'Medinot Asa V'Yitein Mas Et Kiyad HaMelech. So the king made a great party for all of his noblemen. He called it the Esther Party. Let off taxes to all the various countries and sent out gifts. This is one of the strangest, strangest non sequiturs, not to mention, forget about it being a non sequitur, doesn't make any sense in and of itself. And when they went to gather the virgins once again, Mordechai Yoshev Bishar HaMelech, and Mordechai was sitting there in the Shar HaMelech, Enes Ter Mageret Melat Tavet Amar Kasher Tziva Leha Mordechai, Et Ma'amar Mordechai Ester Osa Kasher Haita Bomna Ito. Now, I mean, you see that there's no connection between one pasuk and the next, even between the words within the pasuk, not to mention that whatever is, whatever small sense we can make, it's already been repeated so many times. I mean, to say, Kasher Tziva Aleha Mordechai, Vet Ma'amar Mordechai Ester Osa, Kasher Haita Bomna Ito, which we've already said before, Ki Mordechai Tziva Aleha Asher Lo Tagid, this was again and again the theme before. So Chazal have a fantastic insight at the Gemara into what is happening over here. And the key is the Vehika Beitz Betulot Shinit. So that the only possible explanation, if you think about it, and it's absolutely brilliant, the only possible explanation after having just had this Miss Universe beauty contest in which we finally select the woman that you actually fall in love with to go ahead and to make a second Miss Universe contest? For what? Say Chazal, this is related to Mordechai Yoshev Bishar HaMelech. And what happened was this, the three statements in the previous pasuk. Vayasem al mishteh gadol l'chol sarav avadav. A, he made this massive party believing that her initial reluctance to come forward with who it was that she was, perhaps she wasn't from the best of families, but he, after all, is open to all. The great king of multiculturalism, in which whatever is lacking in your past has nothing to do with the grand glory of your future. And so he assumed if he makes this international party the Esther Party. Well, I mean, renaming the Republican Party the Esther Party is absolutely fantastic. Now she's got to come clean. Nothing. She doesn't say a word. So then he passes the Esther tax reduction law. Now everybody, no matter what she is, I mean, everybody could only be thankful to Esther at this point. She's expecting millions of telegrams. Not a word. She's still not saying who she is. So then he gave out gifts in Esther's name. So it was the Esther gifting. Still not a word. And so he decided he's going to go to speak to Mordechai about it. Not realizing Mordechai Yoshev Bishar HaMelech means that at this point, the personal yoetz of the king, just like Daniel was Mordechai. And at this point, he is Yoshev Bishar HaMelech. He is there watching all this take place. Yoshev is a ongoing yeshiva. So there he is, Bishar HaMelech, obviously telling Esther the entire time, as Rashi says, don't say a word. Now, this is not easy to do. He doesn't know, and how do you pull off not saying a word?
Not about Esther, but Mordechai.
And of course he doesn't know about Mordechai. That's the whole point, as we'll get to. I'm getting there. So, he says to Mordechai, look, I got a serious problem. Now again, we don't understand what the serious problem is, because it does not seem very serious. I mean, okay, you know, she's not talking. So, give her time. What's the big deal? We'll see. He had a serious problem. So, he says to Mordechai, what do I do? Says Mordechai, there's only one thing to do, sir. If there's anything that a woman is going to respond to, is jealous. Select another one. Watch her talk. And so, they make a second Miss Universe contest. Well, they were all waiting in line. He chose Esther early. Well, Esther, I suppose we'll just have to find someone else. Esther? Esther, we're going to find someone else.
No.
Nothing. Now, what is this all about? Remarkably, this is the only reason that Esther's life was saved, was the second beauty contest. Because here's what happened. The king is already paranoid. Zacharat Vashti ve'eta shirasata. As far as he's concerned, just as we saw that he was unable to relate to woman, he is certainly not going to put himself into a position where he has no idea what this woman stands for, what it is that she's trying to achieve. And for all intents and purposes, it would be the way we look at Obama, some kind of plant. Where does she come from? She doesn't have a birth certificate. It's exactly the same issue. So who is this? Now, you'll notice that this was exactly the problem later on when Esther is found walking without invitation into the king's inner chambers. So here's what's happening. She's refusing to talk. However it is that she's refusing to talk, it's not an easy thing. The king says, talk. Now you've got 5 seconds. Talk. 3 seconds. Guards, 1 second. What does Esther do? This man is a madman. What does she do? There's only one thing she can do. What's she going to do? She's too embarrassed. She can't talk. What are you going to do? Off with her head. So now, the question is, if this is for real, and he's got to know, is this for real? He tells Mordechai, look, this is insane. I mean, there's absolutely nothing for her to fear. There's something very strange going on. Why does she not have a birth certificate? Why won't she tell who she is? What is with this woman? So Mordechai says there's one surefire test. If there's anything at all that's involved that has to do with her, if there's anything at all that's involved, even because she's a plant, she can't afford to be supplanted either, right? So therefore, you've only got one. Now, this is astonishing because what Mordechai is doing is he's giving a new kushpanka for a government-sponsored rape. I mean, this is exactly what Mordechai HaTzadik is out there to achieve, you understand? So the only possible way that we can excuse this kind of behavior is the fact that he saw this as the only possible solution for Esther's survival. And yet, the fact that she wasn't going to say anything doesn't seem all that important that he should have gone to such an extreme to protect her identity at this stage. The whole thing is so mysterious. Not only to protect her identity, but Chazal pick up in the next pasuk, in the closing pasuk, that Mordechai, as the Gemara puts it, the only thing that'll really move a woman is another woman's thigh. Ein Esther, ein isha mekana ela b'yerech haverta. Ein Esther mageret maladata v'etamaka shetiva le Mordechai. Fine. V'et ma'amar Mordechai Esther osa kasher hayta b'omnaito. Meaning that the relationship that she had originally had, which is always a function of emunah, faithfulness to relationship, as the way Chazal put it, she would sleep with Ahasuerus, sneak out the back door, and go to bed with Mordechai. Kasher hayta b'omnaito. So hayta omedet b'cheiko shel Ahasuerus, v'tovelet v'yoshevet b'cheiko shel Mordechai. So that means that the relationship that was with Mordechai to her and to him, this was a fundamental part of what was happening during this entire period. In the end, when Mordechai tells her, go seduce him, and she hasn't been called for 30 days, that meant that she lost her husband. You see, until now she could say she was raped. Mordechai, not being a Kohen, has no problem with a woman who is in a state of coercion by somebody else to sleep with them. That doesn't make her prohibited on her husband. She's an anusa. But the moment that he says to her, you go to Ahasuerus, he was giving her away. And that's why she says later on, Kasher avadati, avadati. Just as I was lost to my parents in their death, now I'll be lost to you. And of course, that connects the relationship that she had as Bemot Avi Avi Imale, Kachar Mordechai Lo Levat, is part of her vision of her essential self. So that something here revolves around the very relationship that she has to all that is meaningful to her. Now let us take a look and see how central this idea is, going all the way back not only to Shaul, but going all the way back to the Mekor of Shaul, which is Rachel. So the way the Gemara puts it is, Lo yigara mitzadik einav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu never lets anything out of his eyesight when it comes to the schar that a tzadik is supposed to have. It was b'schar tzniut shaita ba b'Rachel zachta v'yatza mimena Shaul. Because of the tremendous tzniut that Rachel had, now she sure doesn't seem like the most tzniut woman in the world. I mean, the only case that we have in which somebody goes straight over and gives a boy a kiss is Rachel. I mean, what's this tzniut shaita ba b'Rachel? Okay, fine. The Gemara will discuss that. So she is zocha to Shaul. And b'schut tzniut shaita lo b'Shaul l'Shaul, but I assume that means the fact that he desperately did not want to be picked out to be the melech, and he went and he hid in the baggage room when the loudspeakers were announcing him to come up. It seems pretty tzniut. So because of that tzniut, zacha v'yatzat mimeno Esther. Now what's surprising is that we're wrong on every last assumption. I mean, certainly tzniut, I mean, it does not seem to be the word for a woman who is seducing the king of Persia. But anyway, whatever this tzniut is, we're totally off. The Gemara says, what is the tzniut that was in Rachel? Dichtiv. That's the whole interaction that Yaakov has with Rachel when they first meet. So Yaakov tells Rachel, ki achi aviyahu. Asks the Gemara, but he isn't achi aviyahu. What do you mean he's achi aviyahu? Ah, valo ben achot aviyahu. He was a nephew. Ella, what must have happened is that he said to her, it was love at first sight, marry me. She says, yes, but my dad will never let it happen. He's a tremendous Ramite. So he says to her, Achiva nibra ma'ut, I can out-manipulate him. That's what Achi Aviyah means. So she says to him, is a tzaddik allowed to be such a wonderful Rama? I thought you guys were supposed to be straightforward. Wasn't your name Yaakov Ish Tam? So he says to her, oh, absolutely. Im navar titavar vimikesh titapal. When you're dealing with screwed up people, treat them as they deserve. Act the same perverse way that they act. Anyway, he says to her, so what exactly do you think the plot is going to be? Oh, she says, for sure I can tell you what it's going to be. I have an older sister. And there's no way that he's going to allow me to get married before her. Somehow or other, he's going to get her in there. No problem. That's simple. Gives her over the simani, right? Okay, so now there's a way in which he can clearly identify her. And so how's that going to stop anything? What do you mean? It's very easy. How's it going to stop anything? Listen, love on baby, don't try any. Believe me, we have all the angles covered. Fine. Would have been easy, right? So he gives her the simanim, and what happens? Nonetheless, what is that supposed to mean? What do you mean? She wasn't Leah until now. Only in the morning she turned into Leah. Must be that Rachel gave the simanim to Leah, so you know who she was. What does that have to do with tzniut? That has to do with care, love, concern, and so on. Is that tzniut? Says Rashi. The tzniut is, remarkably, and here's his words, she gave it to Leah, v'hu tzniut. That is tzniut. Why is it tzniut? Because the only reason that she gave it to Leah is she lo yitparsim hadavar shemasar la simanim. She didn't want anybody to know about the simanim. I mean, it would have been absolutely easy to prevent any type of embarrassment to Leah. All she had to do was tell her father, look, Yaakov and I have been discussing this, and he's given me ways in which I can be positively identified. There's nothing that you're going to be able to do. So don't try, because you're just going to look like a fool. And there's no point. But she doesn't say that. And she knows what's going to happen. He's going to substitute her. And in the end, she gives better, rather than giving over the simanim, rather than letting it be known that there were simanim, she gives them to her sister. The only possible reason for that is, well, here is the essence of tzniut. The only possible reason for that is the sensitivity to other people knowing of a relationship and belittling. She did not want her father to know that she had a relationship with Yaakov. That's all. That itself, it's so meaningful to me. It is so valuable to me. And he is going to turn it into something small and dirty and stupid. I don't want him to know. That's what tzniut means. And it's exactly what happens with Shaul. You think the tzniut of Shaul was that he ran into the baggage room? Absolutely not. Ask the Gemara, what was the tzniut of Shaul? Oh, the tzniut of Shaul, I mean, you'd think, my God, I mean, obviously everybody knows what the tzniut of Shaul. Says the Gemara, the craziest thing. The tzniut of Shaul was that when Shaul went to look for the missing donkeys, and he comes to Shmuel, and Shmuel tells him that he's going to be king, and he makes him king, essentially. When he comes home, so the family asks him, so what did he tell you when you went to see the Ro'eh? Oh, he said you already found the missing animal. And there it says, Vidvar et devar hamilucha lo higidlo asher amar Shmuel. Not he didn't tell him that he was king. He didn't tell them what Shmuel had said to him. Asher Amar Lo Shmuel. And if you take a look at the entire story of the giving over the Malchut, there's this long introduction about the way that he and Shmuel spent all that night in private, up on the roof. All the things that Shmuel was telling him that we don't know, the relationship that developed that we don't know. And the Malchut was given over in the context of that relationship. He didn't say a word about that, Asher Amar Lo Shmuel, for the same reason. He didn't want it looked at, oh, wow, yay! He wanted it to be something that was really meaningful, more meaningful than the malchut itself. And this is tzniut. Running away from kavod is not tzniut. The fact that he hid out when he had to be the king is not tzniut. And we'll see that it's actually problematic. But this, that he didn't want to expose a relationship, yes, that's tzniut. So the essential nekuda over here is exactly the same thing. Since it was, and this is Mordechai now, the entire kish, he's actually 10th generation to Shaul. And that means that the tzniut that we find over here, the fact that she refused to say who she was, is centered around the relationship to Mordechai. What's more is that there's even a medrash that suggests that Mordechai Yoshev Bishar HaMelech had to do, Yoshev means that he was Yoshev then. And wasn't Yoshev in that same level of position earlier? So as choshev as he was not the Daniel of his time. And that it was Esther who had suggested to the king that, you know, there's a long-standing tradition among all of the kings that they have a great guru at Tzadik. Tzadik, yes, Tzadik. You know, there's 36 of those. It's very in, you know, Madonna likes it and so on. You should have a Tzadik of your own. So she goes back and she talks about Daniel and when what happened with Yosef and Paro. This is like this whole historical thing she tells him. I don't understand. I came in here thinking you were an enlightened king. There's no tzaddik. And you don't even have any red threads around your hand. What's with you, man? So he says, well, do you know of any tzaddiks available? She says, well, actually, I do happen to have heard of one. There's this holy man, Mordechai. So they invite Mordechai in. And that is, he's Yoshev Bishar HaMelech. Now, this, of course, makes her relationship with Mordechai a bit easier, to say the least. But in any event, it means that it's another thing that is, in a sense, a vast surrounding of the palace with inyanim of Mordechai and Esther that bear not exposure on any level. And what it was that she was protecting, Zei Chazal, was the protection of that. It was Ma'amar Mordechai Esther Osa. That was it. Since she lives her life the way that she always had lived life with him, that was what was important. It wasn't about protecting herself. It wasn't about fear. It wasn't about a plan in which everything should work out later. No plan. But the fact is, the greater the tzniut, always, the greater are the options that open up. The main problem with the lack of tzniut is, remarkably, the fact that it limits your options. When people go out, the more they are brazen, the fewer options they have in life. The brazenness is directly related. That's why we call it brazen. Brazen means it's made of bronze. It's the same thing that we find in the Pasuk. I point out that in English, it's metzach nechoshet in Hebrew. It's brazen in English. So it means that the idea of mechanics, the al-charpach ha-tichtia, that you can make things happen, is antithetical to the nature of tzniut. In exactly the same way that physical sex, pornography, is the opposite of love, for the same exact reason. It takes something which is an emergent relationship and reduces it to physical, mechanical activity, which has absolutely nothing to recommend it. And because of that, everybody feels disgusted by it. It's mechanical. It's a reduction of the people that are involved, and so on and so forth. It's the exact opposite. She came into the position of Vashti, basically into a pornographic palace. What it was that they were talking about when they invited Vashti, what it was that Vashti had wanted to achieve in this revolution, together with Ahasuerus, was the opposite of tzniut in a profound way. Not the opposite of tzniut because she doesn't have any clothes on and she has clothes on. That's not the point at all. But rather, the entire expression of what the human condition is, what needs to be protected, what are the most important things, the most vulnerable things, the most subtle things. Those are the things that she will protect. And it's precisely that they understood all along would allow her all of the possibilities that were to open up as a result of this entire story. So yes, from the point of view, and by the way, in a sense, that's exactly what Ahasuerus feared, isn't it? It was the very fact that she was Sanua that was terrifying. The truth is, if you think about it, it's what everybody fears. When you meet someone who is Sanua, you worry. Because you never know, like, so what's really going on inside, right? Especially Americans. They have to love to have everything on the surface. Does anything the least bit mysterious, something funny about that girl, right? I mean, why isn't everything right out there on the surface?
Mrs. Dursley.
Okay.
I know.
Yes. All right, but that's it. In other words, the more shallow you are and the more focused you are on getting what you want out of a relationship, the more fear you have of someone that you can't read, that isn't wearing everything right there on their face. That is what is so remarkable. How is it possible that an individual that is so attractive, that everyone feels so comfortable with, that feels I can identify with, should at the same time be someone that is so tsanua? Because what we identify as tsanias is often just mystery and the need to maintain a separateness. We're going to see that this is exactly, in the end, what destroyed Shaul. Even though Shaul comes from Rachel, in the end of this story, Esther has to be mitakenet, everything that went wrong with her great-grandfather, because of the fact that that's what allowed the opening of Amalek exactly at this time. Which means that the very idea of what Esther was doing vis-a-vis the palace at this point, even before Haman ever arrived on the scene in the Megillah, which is in the beginning of the next parak, is central to, as Chazal put it, Bara HaKadosh Baruch Hu Refu'ah L'Makah. It's her activity here that not only logistically allows her to suddenly burst out of hiding at the end, but it obviously is an existential issue because she's defined by the word Esther. That she's Haitam Masteret Advarea. That idea of Masteret Advarea as a name is a definition of her essence. It can't just be something that she was doing as a trick. And therefore, we have such an amazing story. One step after another, at each point, it becomes more and more imperative for the king to make sure that she is truly, that this is real, that it's not on some level a woman who thinks that she's better than him, who can resist his desire to know who she is. That would be a disaster. And that's why at the end, when suddenly, after months, she's walking in, and she feels she's risking her life, and we think, oh, come off it, man, you're walking into your wife. This is ridiculous. I mean, it's at that point that the plot seems absurd. It's almost as if, you know, when we stick in the words, and you know that anybody who doesn't get that gets their head shot off, and I haven't been called in. It's a good thing we got in that little sentence. Now the audience is strongly aware of the disaster that is about to take place, and there's a crescendo as the orchestra builds up a bit. I mean, real Gilbert and Sullivan, right? But if you're aware of what's going on under the surface, the satire is so profoundly powerful. Can you imagine what he was thinking? Uh-huh. So now it comes. Sweet little Esther. Sure. I knew it. She's brilliant a little. I won't say it. She's brilliant. All right. Let's see, guys. Just take good aim, will you, please? I'm just curious. What's this going to be about? And she's coming up. Okay, Esther. Sure. So what is it? Would you come to a party? Oh, right, a party. So obviously when she says, would you come with Haman to a party? Oh boy, what does that do to him? As the Gemara says, she was convinced at that point he was going to kill both of them. But at least that way she'd get rid of Haman. It was just asking that Haman should come to the party. You see how real the issues are. And it's obvious, if you would be in that position, you would have shot her too. It sounds like this crazy story, and yet when you take it to consideration, this is a simple translation of the most profound ideas that begin in Gan Eden. All of the subtleties of the interrelationship of men and women, the nature of lo yidboshash, the idea of mechanics, of trying to even look at everlasting life as mechanical, which is exactly the modern vision. So that's that unbelievable pussy. Well, who knows? Now he may stretch forth his hand and take of the fruit of the tree of life and eat it and live forever. I mean, do you realize how absurd all of that is? He may stretch forth his hand. And, you know, I mean, why not go all the way? He may move the muscle on his upper arm, extend his hand towards the tree, close his fingers around the fruit, bring the fruit gradually back to his oral cavity. Open, insert the fruit, chomp. I mean, that's what it sounds like when you read the puzzle. It's almost a hilarious presentation of mechanics, because it's exactly what happened. The reduction of relationship to mechanics in Gan Eden meant that the way in which people would view how do we reach immortality was by finding the fountain of youth, by ingesting gold, by discovering telomeres, whatever it is, but it's always mechanical. It's ever an achievement of what I am that could be eternal. Never occurs to anybody that the worst thing that could ever happen to them would be to live forever. who wants to live forever. And so it was at this point that once again, now that we have set up Esther, we once again turn to Mordechai. When I say we've set up Esther, I mean that she is now in a position of having been empowered to act. And it's a position that is empowered in exactly the opposite way in which we generally think of power. Generally, we think of power as control. So if somebody's going to go in, I mean, all of the classic political wives, it's always a matter of control. Yes, of course, they use seductiveness and femininity and so on to control, but the control is so evident to everybody around them that, I mean, everybody else sees them as witches, as destroyers of the kingdom, or whatever the case is. It's only the victim male who never understands what's happening to him. But this is not what people are saying about Esther, except for two people, by the name of Bigthan Meserah. Interesting. And there, by Amim Ahim, Mordechai Yoshev Bashar HaMelech. Now, remarkably, there he was sitting Bashar HaMelech because, according to this Medrash, of Esther herself. So this entire thing we see first, the dependency of Esther on Mordechai, and the way that now Mordechai becomes dependent on Esther. And now, again, Esther will become dependent on Mordechai, as we're about to see in a moment. So he is there now, sitting Bashar HaMelech. Katsav Bigthan Vatera Shnei Sirisei HaMelech Mishomrei HaSaf. Now, these were two of the ranking watchmen of the door, which meant, of course, much more than just standing there with a rifle. It meant that they were the ones in charge of entry, exit, and everything that would be going on in terms of palace intrigue and so on. And they decided, Vayivakshu Lishloach Yad B'Melech Achashverosh, they were going to stretch forth their hand against King Achashverosh. There's even a remarkable medrash that talks about what does it mean to stretch forth their hand. I mean, did it mean that they were actually going to murder him with their hands? Or, I mean, was this a poison? Would you call a poison stretching forth the hand? There's an unbelievable shita that says it was a sophisticated machine. So that what they had was a little ball that would be swallowed as they give the king the drink after he comes out of the heated bath. So they used to drink this asparagus, in order to call it, not to be confused with asparagus. And in it, they would put this little ball, which, as swallowed, would pop open with a spring and lodge itself right in his throat, causing him to be unable to swallow. He would then ingest whatever it was he was drinking into his lungs, and that would be the end of him, and nobody would ever be the wiser, thinking that he simply had choked to death. Very cute. But this is, again, the ultimate mechanics. Manganon, as the Medrash puts it. A machine of all things. The ultimate application of mechanics. And so, why had they decided this? Because of Esther, says the Gemara. Since this woman has come into the palace, she's taken complete and total control over the man. The man doesn't sleep anymore. It's always Esther this and Esther that. And can we have another bottle of champagne? And God, what is going on in there? So let's get rid of him. Exactly. So clearly the issue over here was that he has been ruined. Too late. Vayidava hadavar leMordechai. And this becomes known to Mordechai. And how does it become known to Mordechai? Once again, we get back to the Mordechai Bilshan. It turns out that Bigthan Vateresh were very strange people, came from Tursia, and they spoke Lashon Tursi, which nobody else does. And so they thought that they could communicate rather freely between them. And it turns out that, of course, since he was Bilishkata Gazit, and not to mention he was Mordechai Bilshan, for heaven's sakes, that's not the kind of guy that you want to go talking anything private in Lashon Tursi, the ultimate code breaker. And so he finds out the entire plan. Vayaged le'Esther Hamalka. Now this is crazy. Vayaged le'Esther Hamalka. This guy is raping his wife, and he's going to save his life? Is this a little strange? He should have maybe handed them some extra money to make sure that it works properly. I mean, what in the world is he Vayaged le'Esther Hamalka? For what purpose? Why does he want to save this guy? This is quite astonishing. Not to mention, I mean, there are Midrashim that's other, very, actually, strange Midrashim where we could have real questions about it. So, One Medrash suggests maybe he wanted to save the guy, because after all, Avram Avinu was given a bracha, v'nivruchu b'cha kol mishpachot ha'adamah v'zarecha, which means that we are responsible to bring blessings to the entire world, and that means that I have to save the guy. I mean, we find that Daniel, in giving an Eitzah Teva to Nebuchadnezzar, is punished. That Horidu Migdulato, Chatchu Migdulato, Hatach, he becomes called later. And over there he had very good reason to do so. I mean, as we know, what happened is that he had Nebuchadnezzar open up the storage houses of the king to the poor of Yisrael, who had been brought out into the Galut, in order to be Mechaper on the terrible prophecy that the dream held for him. So why would that be an explanation? Others say that he traced it back to Yosef. Yosef went to, but there he went to save the world. There he didn't do anything to help Paro per se. He was dealing with a universal issue, hunger, the chances of saving his own family and so on. But what exactly could be the deeper reason? Now you'll notice, by the way, Mordechai doesn't tell the king. He tells Esther. Now, he tells Esther because Esther is the one that's going to have to make the decision. He's not going to make the decision to save the rapist. It's up to Esther. So that already means that we're talking about something that he understands needs to be done but should not be done by him. So he gives it over into the hands of Esther. Now, there's only one explanation that I believe is correct, and it ties into everything that the Megillah ends up speaking about. And that is, once again, we spoke about psychohistory before. Part of the issue, interestingly enough, even in that metaphor, is the way in which situations evolve till there's really no choices left at the end, other than not to do anything, which is not a choice, because then the situation didn't have to develop. Basically, both Esther and Mordechai proceed throughout on the assumption, the way that Chazal put it, nitan lahem remes, and they were chash. Meaning that they took the situation because of the intensity of its meaning for history, and because of their own personal, particular presence in terms of history. They took it as an indication that they were meant to act seriously. Not to think seriously about themselves, in the sense that even when Mordechai tells Esther that this may be the moment to act, it's always with umiyodea. It's possible. Who could know? You can't know. But that's the point. You don't act because you know. You act because of what's available to you to do. Therefore, Mordechai sensed the entire thing is mad. Here he is, Mordechai Yoshev B'Shar HaMelech. Two people, the only person in the world could possibly have understood what was going on, is him, having just been appointed to be there. And he is the only one that has the access to the woman that can make the decision as to whether, I mean, it's crazy. What am I supposed to do? Say, let him drop dead. For what? I mean, I don't need to be there at all for let him drop dead. My own personal behavior has to be shaped by giving the information to Esther. That's what's up to me. For the first time, Esther, in a sense, violates the treaty of silence by specifically, Vayaged l'Esther amaka, Vatomer Esther l'Amelach b'shem Mordechai. Now, she wasn't told to say it over b'shem Mordechai. She certainly could have kept the fact that she had gotten it from Mordechai a secret, which would have been consistent with everything else. And unbelievably, we know the famous limud from here, which seems absolutely crazy. Kol ha'omer davar b'shem omro, mevi geula l'olam. I mean, because of this weird coincidence, and in this particular case, it happens to be that she said it over to the king, b'shem Mordechai. From there we learn a general rule. Anybody who says something over the name of the person who says it brings geula to the world? What? I mean, maybe it's just like a nice thought-out move. Was it a nice thought-out move? Why would she violate it? In other words, there was something that she sensed from her point of view that made it necessary to keep the name of the person to be attached to it. And indeed, vayivukasha davar vayimatze, they found it. You know, what did they find? Maybe they found the machine. Was it enough that they found the poison or the machine? No, says the Gemara, because then how could they prove that it was Bigtan Vatarish just because he said so? What they did find was that it turns out that Bigtan Vatarish were, the whole thing was brilliantly done. They had been placed into a position in which they would be keeping watch over the other. In other words, there was no way that one of them could have had access to something at a time, so what would they do? The other one would have had to have been present at that same time, and what wouldn't have been able to act, they wanted to make sure that one couldn't, let's say, draw the king's attention
kitchen while the other one would do something else and put something into the glass. So they were always given positions that were not able to work in concert. So as the Gemara puts it, Ein mishpatiu mishmartecha shaveh. How are we going to do this together? The only way they could do it together is one of them had to play sick and the other one would cover both roles. And that's the Vayukasha Davar V'Yimatse, that they were not in the correct Mishmar. That was too much of a coincidence, and because of that, it turned out that Mordechai was right. But here, Vayikatev B'Sefer Divrei HaYamim Lifnei HaMelech, this was written, and we know, as Chazal tell us, when it says HaMelech, just plain, it's always a reference to Melech Malchei HaMelechim. And this is the way that Chazal put it. If a Sefer of Basar V'Dam turns out to be, because it kept that name, Mordechai, in that book, and that turned out to be the entire turning point. The thing that completely destroyed Haman was that book, that name in that book. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who says, Vayakshev HaShev Yishma Vayikatev V'Sefer Zikaron Lefanav, the same words, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a book also. A book of conversations between people that are the opposite of Biktan Vaterash, people that care about him, that want things to be better. Those are the names that get into that book. And that is the Sefer Kol HaKatuv B'Sefer B'Yerushalayim of all those who are saved in the Geula HaTida. So if a name that's written down in a Sefer of Basar V'Dam is never forgotten, imagine, al achat kama v'kama, sifro HaKadosh shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that every last detail and the name of every individual was included in it, will not be forgotten. But that the power of that assertion is indeed connected to the concept of shame. In other words, it puts the shame of where something comes from right at the process of Geula itself, even in terms of Kavayocho Zichrono Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know the minhag that you say a pasuk that has the first letter and last letter of your name in order that your name shall not be forgotten, Yom Adin, right? Okay, that relates to the same idea. The sense that a person has of his placement in the story of creation as a whole is his name. When she said over that name, the idea Mevi Gula La'olam is because it's a cosmic process. It's not simply that there was the mechanics over here of, let's remember, after all, you'll owe him one. That wasn't the point. I wasn't interested in owing him one because it was just as likely that she would get into trouble and he would get into trouble than that it would be useful. But one thing was important. If he was acting on the assumption that this is what needed to be done because this is where he was put, then his name had to be associated with whatever ripples would ultimately come of it. Just as in the end, Lo Yigara Mitzadik Einav is the whole story going all the way back to Yaakov Avinu, Rachel, Shoal, the birth of Haman through the night of Agag and all of the Milchemes HaMolek initially, and the way that this would now she herself, as we'll see later on, traces us back, as it says in Tehillim, that she herself had traced back at the end, and that's why she insisted that the Megillah be written. You're not normally allowed to add any mitzvahs, and this is what she was doing. And that means that she had a profound sense of historical placement so that she kept open the possibilities, it kept open the possibilities for Mordechai as well. And those possibilities are always linked to shame.